the harvest is ripe, but the laborers are few. Why did he use that word?
God goes to extreme measures to bring the lost to himself.
The greatest gift you will ever give this world is your intimacy with God.
The Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit are all three inside of me. I've got the power right now.
I think what Jesus really wants is people to go. I want to be the answer to Jesus' prayer request.
Welcome to the Fuel for the Harvest podcast.
When this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world, then shall the end come.
Hey everyone, and welcome to this latest episode of Fuel for the Harvest. This is Nathan.
And this is Charlie. We're your hosts for today. And we're here with our good friend, Justin. And we just want to dig into his life and some of what he's been through. So, Justin, thanks for joining the podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, guys. It's great being here. Hey to you guys out there. I'm excited to share.
We like the beard, man.
Thanks. Yeah, this is...
You got handlebars going on today?
Well, I'm trying. It's a new thing. I think it's my calling, so we'll see.
Wow. We've talked about calling from time to time on this podcast, but I have yet to hear about that calling, so...
Well...
The calling to grow a beard?
To grow a handlebar mustache.
I think you leaned into the joke a little bit too much.
Justin is not only a good friend of ours, he... also does a lot of the creative and video work for Forge as a ministry, which this podcast is a part of. So, man, it's a fun time to have you on here. So, Justin, why don't you just start telling us a little bit about who you are and then dig into what was your life like? How'd you come to know Jesus? And what's some significant points in your life? I know we'll get into some of that, but would love to just have you kick it off.
Yeah, awesome. We'll do. Yeah, so we'll start just way at the beginning. back when I was born. So definitely
born at a young age.
Born at a young age, yep. And so I was born into a Christian home. I can remember from just age like 0 to 4 basically, you're born to that. Like, you know, going to Sunday school, those kind of things, you know, just doing all that. And then I was baptized as a baby, but at some point in my early childhood
they didn't do dunk baptism.
No, it wasn't dunk baptism. No. It was,
you know, babies can swim.
Well, yeah. I didn't want to try that with mine, so.
And it wasn't a baby dedication. I honestly can't remember what my parents told me, but part of me thinks it's, you know, it was like the Catholic, you know, thing up there. So I was like, okay. So fourth grade Justin rolls around. He's like, oh, you know, I actually really want to be baptized. Like, I want to make this decision for myself. Mm-hmm. And so I ran with that. Like, took a baptism class, and I really liked it. It was great. And ended up being baptized. And so from that moment, I was like, okay, this is it. Life's about to get good. I'm with Jesus. Like, he's in my life. You know, this is awesome. He's just
easy from here on out.
Exactly. Easy here on out. Was not easy at all. And I remember from that moment on, it got pretty hard. I remember my parents starting to fight a bit more, and I remember just like hiding under my bed and just like crying because I was so confused and scared. Didn't really know what was going on. No one told me this is what was going to happen, right, in the baptism class. But, that's definitely what came from after the baptism. And then from that point on, from, like, fourth grade up until about, you know, I'd say sophomore in high school, it was very much, going to church, youth group, those kind of things, you know, living the one-way lifestyle, you know, at church, and then the other lifestyle at school, saying the one thing here, doing the other thing there, and just kind of, like,
I got to stop you before we continue, just because I'm curious. Do you feel like when things started to get difficult after you were baptized, do you feel like that was God testing you? Was that's just life, and life was difficult and you didn't realize it? Do you feel like it was the enemy coming against you? Just out of curiosity, what do you feel like that was about? Or have you processed that?
That's a great question. I guess the easy answer is all three. I don't know. You know? I guess we can just go with that. But life is hard.
Yeah.
I mean, we live in a sinful and fallen world, so we're going to come up against just things of evil in general, even if it's not from the enemy, but it's from the fall, right?
Absolutely.
So, like, those things are going to happen. And then, yeah, it could have been the enemy testing me, you know, or the enemy just attacking me, attacking the marriage, the family. And it could have been God testing me as well. I don't 100% know exactly what it was. I don't know if that answers your question.
Curious. So.
And I would imagine that in most cases in our life, we're not going to know always where difficulties mm-hmm. are coming yeah. from, because I mean, the scriptures do talk about God disciplining us, and mm-hmm. the testing of our faith produces steadfastness. Mm-hmm. And like, there's another one in Romans. So like, I mean, I think it's hard to diagnose exactly where some of these difficulties come yeah. from, but we know for sure that God's going to bring them to good, mm-hmm. which is one of my favorite promises in all mm-hmm. of scripture yeah. there in Romans 8.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is honestly a beautiful segue into basically the rest of my
yeah, there you go. So story. You're yeah. basically living a hypocrite yeah. life, the glorious hypocrite. Exactly. I'm not calling you that.
No,
just
thank you.
Summarizing what you said.
Glorious hypocrite. Yeah, here I am on this podcast. Thanks, guys. yeah, so roll around to sophomore to junior year of high school. So this is a very significant part of my life where on July 20th, 2012 was the Aurora Theater shooting.
Yeah.
And I was actually
in Colorado, right here, not far Colorado. From where yep. we're at.
Born and raised here, and here in Aurora, never thought something like this would happen. And I was actually there that night with a few of my friends. And so we experienced the trauma, the, you know, the evil of a man walking into a theater and killing 13 people. Technically at that time 12, but one of the women, one of the women who was pregnant actually, that baby had ended up dying from that. And so 13 lives were lost that night. And thus started a very hard trajectory of yeah. life from that point. So I was 16 years old at the time when that happened. So, you know, 16-year-old Justin's trying to figure out, like, oh, how do I cope and deal with such a trauma, right, such evil? You know, it's like growing up, going to church, all these kind of things tells me, like, oh, yeah, I should run to God and, you know, he'll make everything better. But there's this other part of me that was speaking a little bit louder that was like, well, why would a good God let something like this happen? Mm. Why would a good God allow for this evil, for these people to die, for a little girl who was there at the movie yeah. that night to die? Mm. This doesn't make any sense to me. So it really started a painful trajectory. But even before I get to the, you know, the more painful parts of that experience so once that had happened, the next day, I had tweeted on Twitter when I guess that was big, maybe it still is, I don't know. But I was like, I'm going to go back to the movie tonight. I'm going to go back to The Dark Knight Rises to watch the movie for all the men, women, and children who didn't get to finish it. I don't know what it was inside of me, but I was like, I'm not going to let this defeat me, even though I basically did later, but head in the heart, it's always a million miles apart. But yeah, I ended up going back that night, and Good Morning America got a hold of that tweet and was like, hey, we'd love to do an interview on you. I was like, okay, sure. I don't really know what more I have to say, but okay, let's do it. Ended up getting interviewed, and they asked me during the interview. They're like, okay, what do you think should happen to the shooter? I was like, okay, wow, this is like the day after, and he's like asking me these questions. Ended up saying, I was like, oh, yeah, the shooter deserves forgiveness because we don't know what he's going through. And did I mean it at the time? Definitely not. You know, like that's just what I was taught. Right. And like, oh yeah, you're taught to forgive. You're taught to, forgive those, right. You know, forgive those who persecute you and forgive your enemies and love them.
And it's easy to say that, but in those moments you're probably feeling like David says in the Psalms, Lord, break his teeth.
Yeah. Basically
slaughter the wicked.
Like, seriously. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it's like, especially in those moments, exactly like what you're saying, it's just like heart-wrenching. Like, most of us struggle to forgive the guy who cuts us off in traffic, let alone like someone who perpetrates some kind of horrible injustice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, ultimately I don't think I said it because I believed it or felt it, but I was like, I know this is the right thing up here. Like, this is what I was taught to do. So like, this is what we need to do. We need to forgive. Mm-hmm. But clearly I had not felt any of what had happened, because then 3 months go by and I'm still living in a way of like, oh yeah, I was there, but you know, no big deal, right? You know, like, I saw a bunch of horrible things, but yeah, whatever, you know, it doesn't affect me. Oh, but it definitely did, because 3 months go by and I'm, you know, finally, when there's silence, I notice silence causes a lot of things to actually come up. I was snowshoeing in Colorado, beautiful mountains, and it's like out of nowhere, everything just came on to me. The sights, the sounds, the smells, that entire night just hit me like a ton of bricks. It felt like a boulder dropped, but you know, it wasn't an actual little boulder. And it just crushed me. I just felt all of the weight in that one moment. I was like, wow, I was there that night. And all of a sudden I felt this like very deep hole just like inside of me. And I was like, I've never known that was there before, but I finally acknowledged that something was missing. Something was just deeply gone. Just this black hole, right? And I was like, wow, this sucks. And from that point, it just got harder and harder. So PTSD became a pretty real thing for me. At the time, I didn't know that's what it was, right? You know, just certain things, certain noises, things like that would just freak me out. I'd freeze, and didn't realize that until some guy actually came in to talk about PTSD with my psychology class at the time. And he started like imitating like gunshot noises. And I think this might've been like my senior year when this happened, and like it triggered me, and I just totally like froze up, and like I couldn't move, and I had to like force myself to get out of my seat and like walk out of the auditorium, because I was just like, my mind was just racing and I was freaking out. I was like, what the heck is going on with me? I feel like I'm crazy. And so it was very much just a hard time of life. I mean, especially at that point then, I was 17. So in my senior year of high school. But yeah, I mean, from that point on, from the 3 months after the shooting to up until about my senior year, it was definitely very much just living a life of like, yeah, I'm fine, everything's okay. And I'd go home and everything's just a disaster inside of me. You know, running to a lot of worldly pleasures, trying to fill the void, trying to, you know, find out what can fill me. And I'm definitely living in depression, but again, not knowing it, because I didn't have words for these things that I was experiencing. And and not like a grill or anything on my parents or anything like that, but you know, we weren't a very close family, and so we didn't have an emotional connection or anything like that. And so I couldn't feel like I could turn to them, because I didn't know how to, because we never talked that way as a family. And so I felt very alone in this, even though I'm sure there were definitely people there. But there's also, I don't know if it's like a prideful thing or a selfish thing, but it's like, you know, nobody knows what I'm going through, right? Well, one, it's because I didn't share that with anybody.
Yeah.
But two, it's, yeah, like not everybody can experience that or knows how to, or how to handle what someone else's trauma is. But Jesus definitely does, but I just chose not to turn to him. It's definitely more angry at him than anything. So if I ever turned to him, it was out of anger and not out of love or anything like that. So yeah, those, you know, 2 years go by, and just living into depression, and it's just becoming very hard. And just like asking myself, you know, like, what's the point of all of this, right? What's the point of continuing to live and into the depression and the suffering and the pain? It just, it's like, there's no point to it. This sucks if this is all that life is, right? And so eventually, again, you know, like, there's definitely a theme of my life of like my head and my heart always feeling like a million miles apart. Like I get it up here, but it's just down here. It does not make any sense. Like it's a complete oblivion. And I ended up getting a tattoo of the theater shooting, you know, to remember the lives that were lost, and like, okay, well, I'm going to keep living, you know, why I want to. And when it came down to it, when I got this tattoo, it was in October of 2015, my friends were getting married, and so I flew out, go see their wedding, and some random person was like, hey, well, what's your tattoo about? Instantly just, like, froze up and got triggered, and it was just, like, could not talk, could not speak, and I felt like I was just, like alone. Like, it really just felt like I was in an isolated room by myself, like a little kid just, like, curled up is what it felt like. And from that moment on, I was like, I need help. You know, I was like, I just knew instantly. I was like, I need help. Like, something's not right up here. And so I had started to attend therapy. I remember I called the counselor's office, and I was like, hey, yeah, I want to start attending therapy. They're like, oh, do you know with who? I'm like, I don't care who it is or when. I'm like, just get me in as soon as possible. They're like, okay, great. You know, we'll get you in here. And so I ended up starting to see counselor, and my expectation of counseling is probably like a lot of other people's. It's like, yeah, I'm going to go in for a few sessions, you know, and I'll be fine, purified, clean by then. I'm all good. No, it definitely was not the case. I was like, yeah, three sessions, I'll be good. And first session I walk in, and my whole thing was like, just lay it out on the table just to get it out there so you can be done. Laid it out all on the table. And what she had told me was like, my pain or is like, it's not like an isolated incident. You know, everything's kind of connected. And so she's like, you're like an onion, you know, like in Shrek, if you guys have ever seen Shrek, you know.
It's like you're like in, layers.
Ogres have layers, right? So we're all ogres. Maybe that's not the best thing to say.
But at least I am. So.
Yeah, there we go. But you're like an onion, you know, there's like the core piece of like the pain that's hurt, right? That's stuck there right in the middle or at the bottom. And you have to continue to peel back these layers to get to that core issue. And I was like, oh gosh, this is going to take a long time. I was like, all right, I guess this is what it's going to take. And so I don't think her and I had even talked about the theater shooting until maybe 4 or 5 months later.
Wow.
Like even, I don't even know if we talked before I came to the experience about the theater shooting. I mean, we maybe like briefly tapped on it of like the feelings I felt there, but.
By the way, if you're listening, the experience is young adult discipleship training with Forge. Love for you to check it out at forgeforward.org and click equipping anyway.
Yeah. So, we hadn't even really talked about it because there was, again, there's so many layers on top of like this one incident, but everything is connected as well. And so we're, you know, bouncing around from like 1 week. I'm like, oh, I'm feeling this way about this and this, but it slowly started to help me just start to understand my feelings and my emotions. Right. I think that's key. Like, oh yeah. What's anger? What's sadness? What's pain? What's fear? Cause again, I grew up in a family that we didn't communicate with emotions. Right. And so I'm like learning now, like how to communicate what I'm feeling and going through. And it was a very interesting time, to say the least, of just like, oh, wow, there's a lot more about myself than I thought.
Yeah.
And I didn't really know myself. So about 3 months into, or maybe it was like 2 or 3 months, I can't remember exactly when it was, but my counselor had given me this book called Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. And I don't know if you guys have read it here, any of the listeners have, but completely just changed my life. I mean, you know, this man who's a psychiatrist in the time of the Holocaust, a Jewish man, and he gets taken to imprisonment camps and tortured, and he just goes through all of it and his experience of what happened. And he kind of looks at it from a very objective point of view because he's a psychiatrist. But he's asking the question of like, what is a man's search for meaning? You know, what he had found is that more people were ending up dying when they didn't have some sort of purpose or some sort of goal to live for, to aim for, or some sort of trajectory. Like the people who lost hope were the ones that ended up dying quicker or dying faster than the ones who actually had hope for something, which I thought was very interesting. And something that had really changed everything of just like one little sentence, basically. He's like, pain and suffering is inevitable, but the only thing that we can do is change the way that we see it. And that just like blew my mind. I was like, what? Like I have a say in this, like,
You're good.
Like, I have a say in this. I thought I, you know, this is just life. Like, this is what happens. You know, so many people have told me, you know, when I'm like telling them about what had happened or like what I had gone through, not like in detail, but just like, I was here at this thing. Like, oh, it's all part of God's plan. You know, I'm like, what is that even supposed to mean? You know, like I'm hearing these things, so like it's part of God's plan for me to just be in pain and suffering. Like there's nothing that comes from that other than that. Like that sucks. So this entire time I'm just thinking this and feeling this. And then this book tells me, oh no, you have a choice. I'm like, whoa, like that makes, like it makes me want to keep going for something. Like there's gotta be something more to life than just the pain and suffering I'm living for. Right.
Right. It kind of seems like what the scripture says, too. Mm-hmm. Actually, if you look at it, it's not pointless suffering. It's James 1, you have a choice. Suffering is coming, so count it all joy. Mm-hmm. When, not if, when you face trials of many kinds.
Yeah,
right. And so you have the joy of how you're going to see it.
Exactly.
How you're going to view it, what you're going to do in it.
Go figure that someone in the world would discover something that God spoke as true.
All right, yeah, it doesn't really happen that way, does it? Yeah, and what's really cool, too, and not to, like, jump way forward, but, you know, some months after the experience, like, a lot of stuff happened, a lot of change in me. I read the Book of Job, and oh, my gosh, like, it just, I was like, whoa, this is, like, this is so poignant, it's so real, it's true, it's raw, and it's there's so much truth to it of just like, I think in Job 36:15, I think it might be, but Job says like he delivers the afflicted by their affliction and opens their ear by adversity. Mm. And it's just like, whoa, like, so through pain and suffering, mm. God delivers you through the pain and suffering. Mm. Like the only way through it is to go through it, right? And yeah. then he opens your ear by adversity, right? So, and then at the end, Job 42, you know, Job says, I had only heard of you by the yeah. hearing of the ear, but now my eyes see you, right? And so it's like through his pain and suffering, Job actually saw who God was, who's good, gracious, glorious, loving, mm-hmm. right? And so I think it's just fascinating how pain and suffering can develop so much, yeah. well, not just character, but also like love for the Lord and mm. realization of like this humility that mm. like, oh yeah, like I'm literally just but a breath, like mm. just dust, right? And like I'm just one moment in this vastness of eternity, mm. right? But God is like, but I see you and I love you, this like little speck of dust, right? Mm. And there's just something beautiful about it. But anyways, let me backtrack because that kind of pulls forward. Where was I?
I don't know. I mean, so while you're thinking
you were getting counseling and you...
That's right, okay.
You went to the experience and...
That's right, yeah, yeah. Thank you, sorry.
See, you read man's...
You answered for me? Yeah. See, I jumped forward. So I went to a young adults little camp up in Buena Vista, and one of the Forge speakers at the time was Laura Bulgren, and she had spoke about how, you know, you are the apple of God's eye. I was like, no, I'm not. You know, I was still very mad at God at this point. I was just like, I'm not the apple of God's eye. God does not love me. He loves everybody else, but not me, right? So his promises are for everybody else, but not me. Mm-hmm. And I think we can all kind of,
at some point in our lives,
believe that lie, which so much of us can do. And then I remember my friend walking over to me, and he's like, hey, how you doing? It's like, oh, I'm fine. I'm not gonna say what he said, but you know, he looked at me and he's like, yeah, no, you're not. You're not fine. And I was like, you're right, I'm not. And I just began to weep and just weep and cry and just let it all out. And I just remember being very angry. And yeah, I was still like angry with God, but more than not, I was angry with and grieving for the first time the theater shooting. I'd never actually let myself grieve. And like just cry the pain and the suffering, to actually lament what had happened that night and for the lives that were lost and for the evil that was committed. It was the first time. So it's like, yeah, I was angry with God, but I was also angry at the evil.
Yeah.
Angry at the sin that was committed that night. And it was the first time that happened. And and crazy or not, you know, I think 6 months later when I, or, you know, yeah, 6 months later when I did the experience, Laura, she came up to me and talked to me. She's like, yeah, I went back to that room the next morning. And she's like, I was in that corner where you were just crying. And she's like, I just started weeping because she had felt like the weight of that, whatever I was carrying, you know, the weight of just the pain and just like the evil, right? You know, all of that was just carrying and like cried it and grieved it off, really. And she said she just started weeping because she had felt all of that in that corner. I was like, wow, so... There really is a weight to a lot of these things. Like, it's a real thing. Yeah. Mm. The emotion, the spiritual side of it, there's a real realness to it. And then the next morning after that, you know, grief, I went up to this little chapel up there, and I was like, all right, God, listen, we're done. I was like, I'm done with you. Like, I'm tired of this. You know, like, I believe you're real. I totally do. But I'm just done. I don't want anything more to do with you. And I mean, I threw some choice words in there too, but I was like, this is it. I'm done. And then proceeded to be like the hardest month of my life. I mean, he definitely was like, all right, that's what you want. Then that's your choice. Mm. And that was the hardest month. I had struggled a lot during those years with suicidal thoughts and everything. But this was a month where it really like became very apparent to me. That I was like, this is what I want to do. Because again, I was like, well, what's the point? I'm only continuing to live for this stuff. And I'm like, yeah, okay, I remember this book, you know, but I'm like, how does that even work? How does that even happen? Like, how will this come about? You know, how can I find some purpose in this? And so I remember there was one specific night, I don't remember the date, but it was a night and I was like, all right, this is the night I'm going to do it. I have it all planned out. This is where I want to do it, how I'm going to do it, and it's going to happen. I'm going to end my life. And you know, this like this whisper, still small voice. I don't even know how to explain it, but I just knew it was not from me. But it was just his voice that said, yeah, you can end your life. You know, you have free will to do so, or your life is going to impact somebody one day. And I was like, huh, I think I want that. And then I was like, oh, look, maybe this is the purpose that Viktor Frankl is talking about, right? That, like, there is meaning behind the suffering because, like, you can use that to help somebody one day. Mm. And I was like, wow, that actually sounds kind of nice. I think I want to do that route. Okay, like, let's do that. Let's try that. And so slowly started to, like, rebuild this, this, like, fractured heart, right? This fractured soul of just, like, okay, maybe God isn't as bad as I think he is. You know, maybe he is pretty good. You know, someone did speak to me, and I'm pretty sure it was God. So I'm like, you know, maybe he does love me. I don't know. So, you know, I maybe prayed, like, every now and again. Not like I was, like, every day. Or I was just like, yeah, once a month. Hey, how you doing? and then Laura, she's like, hey, have you ever heard about the experience? You should try this thing. And I was like, okay. I just really wanted to get out of my house and out of Aurora, basically, go and do some traveling. Like, I did not want to do the experience for God at all. I was just like, yeah, I'm just going to come and do my thing. And my prayer was like, all right, God, if you want me to do this, you will make it happen. Cause you know, part of it's raising support to get there.
Right.
And I was like, all right, if you want me to do this, you'll make it happen. And he did. And I was like, okay, looks like I'm doing it. And he did it in like 2 months, which typically doesn't always happen that way.
Right.
So I was like, all right.
It's a significant chunk of change.
Yeah. So I was like, all right, I guess this is it. And showed up, and kind of how the experience works is like for the first like 2 or 3 weeks, you know, you go through relearning the truths of who God is. And particularly the two things that were the hardest for me were God being sovereign over evil. That was a tough one for me to go through. And then forgiveness. Those are the two hardest ones that were just like, oh, woof. Like, these suck. I was like, I don't want to believe these at all. I was even looking back at like previous class notes from like the binder that I had just earlier today. And I was like, even on like the sovereignty one, like, it's just like, yeah, this is hard. You know, like even still now, it's like hard to like really just like allow myself to continue to believe in God, not believe in God in the sense of like, I don't believe in him, but just believe his goodness in the midst of the evil.
Right.
Cause it's hard sometimes, let's be real. And so, yeah, you know, go through all those classes and then we go on this mission trip. And so I went overseas to Honduras and a lot of stuff happened in Honduras, but right before Adrian Dupre, one of the speakers for Forge, had taught a lesson about pain and suffering, or maybe it was about suffering, one of those.
Delight and suffering Delight or something suffering. Like that.
Yeah. And then, you know, his classic, like, I'm tired of men being sissies for Christ or just Christians being sissies for Christ. And it's like, huh, maybe I'm being a sissy. You know, like, you know, Viktor Frankl talks about this too, of like how, like, you know, to be a steward of your suffering, because like what you have been given is yours, and how are you going to deal with it? How are you going to use that? And so I was like, huh, maybe I should try something different. You know, maybe I should do something different. So I was like, all right, God, you know, before I left for Honduras, I'm like, I want to give everything to you in the sense of like, I want, like, I'm tired of being 50% in, 20% in one day. Like, I want to be 110% in. Like, if you suffered this much, and like, I want, like, I want to be just yours. Like, I want to be a Christian and not one that's just lukewarm. It's like, if this is what it takes, let's try it. Let's give it a shot. Because I'm like, yeah, maybe I can just walk out later. I don't know. You know, I was like, we'll just see my choices. And went to Honduras, and I can't remember exactly what day it was, but I got really sick one day. And I don't know what I ate. Some people think it was the peanut butter. Maybe it was just when I was brushing my teeth with the water.
Your teeth with the water,
well,
man.
I didn't swallow, you know.
Man,
so I was like,
oh, bad idea.
In your mouth.
Yeah, well, okay. True. But yeah, well, probably wasn't the smartest thing. But anyways, God used it in amazing ways. Like, he can use all things for his good. Ended up being sick for like 2 days, just bedridden. You know, while the group's like off, you know, like going to the villages and hanging out with the kids, or like going zip lining, you know, I'm like over here in bed, just like crying my eyes out because I'm in so much pain. I'd lost 10 pounds in 2 days.
Oh.
I'll let you guys know what was coming out the back end, and it was blood. Not like it was good stuff.
That's bad, man.
It's bad. And I'm like, wow.
If that ever happens to you, see a doctor.
Yeah, definitely see a doctor. But yeah, I was just like, wow, this sucks. And one of two things came to me. I was like, well, I can continue to get mad and try to deal with this on my own. Or I was like, oh, what if I like actually tried to give this to God? I've been doing it one way for the past 4.5 years by this point. I'm like, what if I tried something different? It's like, let's do something different. So I gave it to God. And it was the first time like I had this image of just Jesus being on the cross in pain and in suffering. And I was like, wow, like Jesus actually did that. Like he actually suffered. He was actually fully man and fully God. And he suffered on the cross. And it was the first time Jesus became real to me, really, of just like, wow, like I can actually feel like I can, like, what's the word? Like feel him, or, you know, just like feel what he felt.
Like actually share in the fellowship of his sufferings, that connection, intimacy with him in that suffering.
I was like, wow. So I began to pray this prayer of just, I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. And yeah, you know, sometimes I think a lot of us misuse that of like, oh yeah, didn't study the night before, but you know, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. You know?
Gonna win the football game.
That's right. Exactly. Gotta win the football game.
What if they're both praying to win the game? I don't know. Just saying.
I mean, I don't know. It's got two sides? I don't know.
He does. He chooses his side.
Yeah, that's true. He does choose his side. He chooses the good side. And so, yeah, I began to just pray that prayer. And I can't tell you, I probably prayed that thing like I could not sleep at all. So I was just all the time praying that prayer. And I think you have mentioned something kind of similar to this with you and Dara when you guys were traveling at some point. But like the pain did not go away, but it definitely subsided. Like I could feel a drastic difference of when like I stopped and it just like felt horrible. And then when I prayed that prayer, I still felt the pain, but it wasn't as bad. It was bearable. And I was like, huh, like pain and suffering is inevitable, right? You know, but what's beautiful is that God meets us in the midst of it. And he may not take it away, but again, like Job, he delivers the afflicted by their affliction. It opens their ear by adversity. And so again, like these verses, you know, starting to ring true, just more and more of like what those things are and what they mean. And then so, you know, 2 days pass and I'm like, okay, like feeling a little bit better, still under the weather. And then we go to this church service and, you know, I pray this prayer and all of a sudden like spiritual attack happens. That's probably like a whole other episode, a whole other story. But yeah, I get spiritually attacked and, you know, for about an hour, like this thing is like fighting and people are praying over me. I feel like at one point I drink holy water. I have to call people sometimes and be like, what even happened that night? You know, because they can piece it together better than I can. And so it's like, okay, I had this like horrible sickness and then I was spiritually attacked and I'm like, oh, I'm beginning to realize like, oh, God can take care of me in my health and my physical wellness, right? And then God can also take care of me spiritually because he did. And, you know, there's still some things I'm like, you know, maybe, you know, like those strongholds of like, all right, Justin, you prayed this prayer of like, you want 110%.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's going to hurt. You know, like there's going to be some things that have to come out so I can actually go in.
No pain, no gain.
That's right. No pain, no gain.
Well, yeah. And that whole concept of he must increase and I must decrease, like John the Baptist said, like it's a very real thing.
Yeah.
Like as we surrender more and more to Jesus, that becomes more and more of a necessary reality. Like there's going to be things where he's like, yeah, that needs to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe you can just share, Justin, before we wrap up in the next minute here, what from that place, how has God helped you grow to where you're at today?
Yeah, I'd say the biggest thing to like basically just go past all of this, the last part of the experience, you know, you go to this deep camp and the hardest thing for me to do was forgiving James Holmes. And again, you know, I can't exactly remember. I think it might be in Matthew, but, you know, it's, pray for your enemies, pray for those who persecute you.
Yeah, and
you
the
know.
Lord's in the Sermon on the Mount.
Sermon on the Mount, yeah. And so the hardest thing, you know, there's just one night where one of Foster Christie's speaker again, he had spoke, and he talked about how, all right, this man had murdered somebody, went to jail, found Jesus, and then started bringing other people to Christ. And I'm like, I felt so convicted by that because I was like, what the heck? Like, God can actually use people like that? And I'm like, well, he can't use James Holmes, obviously, this man who did something horrible. But I was very convicted. And I was like, okay. God's like, all right, now I want you to go to your room. And I was like, okay. So I went to the room. He's like, open up your binder. I was like, okay, open up the binder. Of course, forgiveness page pops open. I'm like, all right, guess we're doing this right now. He's like, I want you to forgive him. So I went through, wrote down everything and everything that he did that caused me. Wrote his name and then Said I forgive James Holmes, ripped it up, threw it in the trash. I was like, is this how it still feels? Like, I don't feel any better. I'm like, shouldn't I just like be floating on clouds? Definitely did not feel like that. And God's like, all right, now I want you to pray for him. It's like, are you serious? Now you want me to pray for the guy? I was like, I don't even know how to do that. Like, you just caused me all this stuff, and now you want me to pray for him? I was like, all right. So I was like, okay, I pray for James Holmes. Like, he's probably cold in his jail cell. You know, like, all these things. Like, I didn't really know how to pray, but I was just praying for him. And then, you know, God gave me this image of James Holmes and I shaking hands in heaven. And I was like, wow. Like, if anybody can do that, that's God. That's the Holy Spirit. That's Jesus that can do those things.
And yeah, so the fullness of his redemption.
Yeah. And so leaning into all of those things, the redemption side of everything, you know, it always reminds me of Joseph, right? Like, his brothers had sold him into slavery, and then he was thrown into prison, you know, all these things, like, he was wrongly accused, and then he comes back at the end, you know, his brothers are like, oh my gosh, we didn't know how you're going to react to us, what you're going to do. And he says, well, what you guys meant for evil, God intended for good. Right. And so when I look back on my life, or just on the theater shooting, like, what the enemy meant for evil, God intended for good. And what Satan meant to kill me with, you know, I don't know if I was, you know, if he was trying to kill me that night, you know, I don't know. Like, those things, that some of those things are unknown. But the evil that happened, the pain, the suffering, like, at a movie theater, and then here I am now, like, working for Forge as a videographer, photographer, filmmaker. It's like, okay, so the one thing that, like, Satan used to attack me at a place, and, like, now I'm doing those very things. It's like, that's the story of redemption. Like, that is God's restoration, right? And I think that's beautiful. And so to, like, wrap those things up, and, like, what has God taught me? Like, forgiveness is key, because I found that, like, whoever you choose not to forgive, you tend to become like that person, right? You tend to become like the things you won't forgive. And then, like, God is in the business of restoration. Like, that's what he does. The gospel does restore. It is about eternity, but it's also about restoration here on earth. As, you know, what is it? Give us this day our daily bread, and, you know, like, this, this is it. So
your kingdom come, your will be done on earth.
That's right. So,
wow. Justin, thank you so much for joining us and sharing all that. That's huge. And, I think that we can all find ourselves a little bit in your story. And it's a blessing to be able to just be a part of it. And be able to hear everything that God has done for you in the midst of it. It's amazing. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Well, maybe we'll do another episode sometime. But thank you guys for listening to this episode. If you want to get in touch with Justin, you can email us at fuelfortheharvest@gmail.com, and we can connect you with Justin. But thanks for joining this. God bless you. And if this connected with you, or you think it connect with others, please share this on social media, or send it to a friend, text them, encourage them to subscribe. It really helps spread the word. So thank you guys for listening in. See you next time.